correct me if I'm wrong, like how did the 401k come to be? He was telling me a little bit about you and the fact that you created this. And so that's sort of a fascinating thing. How did that come to be?
Yeah, it was actually passed into law in 1978 without explaining the details and why it was enacted. But section 401 of the IRS code covers all types of retirement plans. So what this legislation did was it added paragraph K, and no one expected it to be a big thing. It wasn't intended to be a big thing. January of 1980 came and went. So anyhow, I was working with the bank on redesigning their retirement structure. And during that process, I came up with two things that weren't included in the legislation, became key parts of 401k. One was adding an employer matching contribution, and the other was for employees to be able to put money in pre-tax out of their paychecks.
And the 401k is such an interesting thing because now it sort of has taken over pensions, which were so common, right? But correct me if I'm wrong, the idea, at least initially behind the 401k, was to give people a little bit more control over their money. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Financial Mastery Simplified. I am your host, Jacqueline or Jax Kreider. And today we have Mr. Ted Benna. And if you don't know who he is sort of the father of the 401k. That was sort of his brainchild. So we are excited today to have him as a guest. I'm going to let him kind of introduce himself, tell a little bit more about his history, why he's excited to be on the show today, just have some good conversations surrounding kind of where our financial markets, I guess, sort of started and kind of where we're at now, et cetera. So welcome, Ted. Thank you for being our guest today. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and why you're excited to be on the show today.
Well, thank you. Hey, well, I'm excited to be on because certainly you agree with the things that you're doing and the as we get into 401k down the road here, it's a good way actually for somebody who's looking to make their first home purchase. It's a way to help them do that, definitely. So, excited to be on and agree that we need multiple ways of building money for the future. And certainly real estate's one of mine. Definitely happen to live in North Central PA, and I see you're a dog lady.
I am.
Well, I live on a small horse farm, so
we have
so horses and some cats, but no dogs.
So I would have been a vet if I wasn't allergic to cats. So I could just go on and on about animals. So, but I mean, God had other plans on the money side, so that's okay by me. But I love that, and so. Correct me if I'm wrong, like how did the 401k come to be? Because I don't even think I truly know. And when I was visiting with one of my other guests, Matt, which the listeners have probably heard, he and I have had several different episodes. He was telling me a little bit about you and the fact that you created this. And so that's sort of a fascinating thing. How did that come to be?
This reel is a bit long, so I'll condense it.
Okay. That's okay.
Just focus on my involvement. And, it was actually passed into law in 1978 without explaining the details and why it was enacted. The paragraph, section 401 of the IRS code covers all types of retirement plans.
Okay.
So what this legislation did was it added paragraph K, and it was only a page and a half long. And it was enacted in the fall of 78, but had a delay of effective date until January of 1980. And no one expected it to be a big thing. It wasn't intended to be a big thing. January of 1980 came and went. We didn't have people running around the country, selling 401k plans. So in the fall of 1980, I was working with a bank client. I was a consultant. That's what my background was. And you're an attorney by training. I've written more legal documents, even though I'm not an attorney, than most attorneys have ever written.
For sure. Well, it's necessary in our space, for sure.
So anyhow, I was working with the bank on redesigning their retirement structure. And during that process, I came up with two things that weren't included in the legislation became key parts of 401k. One was adding employer matching contribution.
Okay.
And the other was for employees to be able to put money in pre-tax out of their paychecks.
Okay.
And that wasn't there either. But there wasn't anything saying thou shalt not. So I chose to head down
for sure.
A little more aggressive approach. And but anyhow, the bank's attorney was hesitant to have them do something that never been done before. So he
turned
it down. And we didn't do a plan for them until a couple years later, probably. So that's how it started. And the first one we did in our own little consulting company, it became effective January 1, 1981. So that started.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, and the 401k is such an interesting thing because now it sort of has taken over pensions, which were so common, right? In fact, most people listening to this probably, I mean, even I had a pension at one point, like a very small one from a company I work for, but they phased it out probably 2 or 3 years into me working for them. But such an uncommon thing, right? And of course, most of our parents, grandparents, and beyond, that was a very common, you know, vehicle for corporations to take care of their people or whatever. But correct me if I'm wrong, the idea, at least initially behind the 401k, was to give people a little bit more control over their money and over the ability to sort of, like you said, donate or have the company donate to it, things of that sort.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the goal of it was to, you know, help individuals save on their own for their future. And that was unheard of. You know, I mean, one of the first big companies I met with was Bethlehem Steel, their senior executives. And when I mentioned the fact that, hey, look, you know, time for you to start getting your employees saving for their future, their HR director told me, well, our people don't need to do that. We take care of them for life.
Right.
So that was the perception. So, you know, what 401k did was the biggest benefit was that it helped turn spenders into savers by making it first priority. Yeah. And that, yeah, that worked for me. I mean, you know, we had four kids and mortgage and it wasn't easy, but, you know, my company did a 50% match up to 6% of pay. And, you know, it's tough, but you know, we did that. And I remember my wife saying, hey, we can't really afford to do that. And I said, well, we can't afford not to either. So that's how it worked, you know, and I have many people who have retired and said, well, I want to thank you because wouldn't have been able to retire without that. And then I had younger employees, which, you know, that was really great to say, hey, I've accumulated, you know, $10,000, you know, that no, I never would have done otherwise. And so, you know, it certainly worked very well in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's just like I said, it's an interesting thing because in my opinion, I think that it can be a very good and very well-utilized tool if used correctly. The challenge becomes that a lot of people still have that mindset that somebody is going to come provide for them, right? Like that idea of like what the pension provided, right? Like, oh, they don't need to worry because like we're going to keep handling it and paying it, you know, until they're old and gray. And the 401k gives you a lot more power, but with that power comes responsibility, right? Responsibility to understand what is it that I'm going to need, like in my later years, like what kind of lifestyle I want to live. Because for some people, you know, they want to take the maybe giant house they've accumulated and downsize it into a smaller place and live a more modest lifestyle in their retirement. And then for others, they don't. They want to continue with that same status quo of what they have, the lifestyle they've achieved and the lifestyle that they have done in retirement. And they're very, very different, right? And this is where, for me, Financial Mastery Simplified kind of comes into play, because so often the objective isn't necessarily that you're doing something wrong per se. It's that you haven't taken the time to step back, to be intentional, to think about what it is you want, how you want your life to look, what steps you need to take to be able to accomplish that. And I think sometimes we're falling back into the old mindset of like what was happening with the pensions and Social Security and just believing on its face that, well, it's fine. Like, I don't really need to think about it or worry about it because somebody's coming to get me at the end. And unfortunately, it's not really true anymore.
Yeah, that's, you know, the biggest problem. You know, of course, you know, when you're 20s, 30s or whatever, you know, the key is actually getting started and doing something. But, you know, the problem is if you don't get serious about your planning as you're, you know, getting older and just it's a matter of, well, when I get there, I'll figure it out. Problem is it's too late. And so you're touching on issues that, you know, I've been involved with myself. We downsized in our mid-50s because we lived in a expensive area in the East Coast, you know, Philadelphia suburbs between Philly and New York. And, you know, they were going to build $100 million worth of new schools. And we already had high taxes and there wasn't any reason we need to stay in that area. So we relocated where we are now out into the mountains in a lot less expensive area and downsized. And, you know, we did it at that time. So that's one thing I've always recommended to people who are approaching retirement is, hey, begin thinking a few years from now about where are you going to live, you know, geographically being an issue, the house that you have, you know, if you have a substantial house, should that, you know, be what you continue to do in the future, et cetera, and, you know, start the process of thinking about that. And of course, another one of is the fact that what are you going to do with your time? You know,
for sure.
You're going to just charge full steam ahead and then all of a sudden just shut it down and wake up and think, oh, this is great. It's Monday morning. I don't have to wake up and go to work. And that's good maybe for a month or two. But then you think about what am I going to do the rest of my life? So that definitely, you know, that's become serious. And one of the things I've been asked a number of times, Jax, to help widows in their planning, you know, when their hubbies have died. And I'm sure, you know, you've gotten involved in that. And so one of the things, particularly when they own a house and the resources are limited otherwise, you know, I ask them, you know, seriously to think about that because the reaction is, well, I don't have a mortgage, doesn't cost me anything. But then I'll say to them, I said, well, start figuring out, even though you don't have a mortgage, how much you actually spend.
For sure.
You know, the taxes, the maintenance, you know, and everything else. And, you know, the fact that you may have significant unexpected expenses and the fact that maybe you'd be better off to pull that capital out if you're, you know, limited and be in a more liquid position. And so definitely those are things to be thinking about.
Well, yeah, that's why a lot of people think like reverse is sort of like the devil, but reverse mortgage can be super helpful. Like for those of you listening with like, you know, in that stage of life or have like maybe aging parents or something like that, it cracks me up. I mean, my mom is so adamant about, you know, that she wants to have this free and clear house. And I'm like, why? Like my brother and I don't want it. You know what I mean? Like, no offense to them. Like, that's not our desire is to own this house that they have. And so I'm like, use that money to be able to fuel, you know, you can make other investments or just make sure you're living more comfortably. Like it's usually for most people, the largest asset they're holding right towards the end. And so a lot of people don't think about that or look to utilize it correctly. I also love that you touched on, it does also crack me up. Like, what are you going to do when you retire, quote unquote? Cause I joke and I tell people all the time that I probably won't be retiring. Like they're going to be putting me in the pine box when the day I stop working, right? So to speak. And that's because, I mean, I am fashioning a life that I don't need a vacation from. Like I don't need to retire from, right? I can control my schedule. I can control, you know, what Adam, you know, what place, you know, what pieces fall into that. And so my father, who's in his 70s, works still. My mom, even though she is officially selling her building and the main part of her business, she still is like going to be continuing to do some stuff on the side. And I find a lot of times too, people don't think this through as well, right? Like, how do you want that to look? Because you definitely don't want to have to be forced to have a job, right? Like something that you, you have to do that you dread going to your point, right? You don't want to wake up and be like, ugh, I got to get up and go to this job I freaking hate. And I'm, you know, 70, 80 years old. Like, that's not the look. But at the same token, you also have to think about, you know, that you could do a career and think about it. I mean, especially like said at your age, you have so much wisdom and knowledge that somebody my age can't even completely comprehend, right? Not that I'm not smart enough. I just don't have that experience level. And so people will pay for that experience, right? So for those people who maybe are very in the employee mindset and they don't have a desire to be an entrepreneur, you may want to start thinking about it as you kind of come to the end, because you don't necessarily want to be chained to a desk 24/7, right? And have, you know, maybe the man breathing down your neck, but you still may want to do something that allows you to find fulfillment and self-worth, right? And income potentially, right, as well. Because I know you're still doing quite a bit of things as well right now, right?
Yeah, at age 83.
I mean, I don't know, from my vantage point, my mom has a very good friend. It was like literally her best friend in high school. They were roommates in college. And her father, so that was kind of like my mom's second dad, if you will, he literally started companies all the way until he was like 86 or 7. I think he started a company like a couple of years before he passed away, right? And I was like, good for him, right? Good for him for finding value and purpose. And I know that'll be me. If I'm not working a physical job, I'm at least going to be volunteering or something. Sure. I can't quite possibly sit still for 5 minutes, much less, you know, 20 years. Like, that's not going to happen, baby. Like, that is not me at all.
Well, our creator didn't create us to sit around for 20, 30 years doing nothing.
Exactly. Right. And like, I just feel like when it comes to just, you know, mastering your finances or mastering anything for that matter, and I talk about this all the time on the podcast, the mindset, the intention, how you're looking at things. And nothing is ever going to go exactly according to plan, right? I mean, heck, my life in the last couple of years has not at all gone to according to my plan or my thought process. But on the same token, you know, it's taught me so much, right? And I've learned so much, and I've been able to figure out how to shift and things like that. What have you learned over the course of times of ways to do that, or ways to, I guess, insulate yourself from the things that happen in life, I suppose?
Well, I think one of the keys is having a 10-year plan income-wise. You know, first of all, you know, having a budget. I mean, I'm used to having businesses, you know, where you have a business plan and you have a budget, and, you know, you measure month to month, quarter to quarter, you know, income versus budget. And
for sure,
you know, that's important to do, especially in your retirement years. And but I also have basically figured 10-year periods of, okay, what am I going to do during this 10-year period relative to, you know, the income that I'm going to be needing to make sure that, you know, I'm on track with, you know, what I need to be doing. So
yeah, no, for sure. Well, and yeah, 10 years, I mean, that's a long time. I think that and maybe you can disagree with me if you'd like, but I think the hardest part about what's happening or what has happened the last 10, maybe even 20 years is, number one, we've all been feeling a crunch as far as income gains, right? We haven't had nearly as many as we'd like to have and we maybe even should have had. And then there's so many different shifts that are constantly been transpiring, right? I mean, I'm in an industry that is very volatile. Always has been a little bit volatile, but even more so probably in the last 5 to 6 years, lots of volatility there. And with that volatility comes a lot of uncertainty, where people aren't staying at their jobs for huge amounts of time anymore, right? They're making movement. It's always an interesting conversation with myself and my dad on, well, why in the world do you guys, you know, move companies so often? And, you know, and now, I mean, that hasn't been the case because we started our own brand and our own thing, but we used to have a lot of that. And I tried to explain to him, well, when you're full commission, right, you're 100% commission, and somebody at the top is making all of these changes to what your income source and stream looks like, what are you going to do? Are you going to sit around and stay for, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years, while they hope, you hope they figure it out? And I think that that's been a lot of the challenge. There's been a lot of just such uncertainty, and it does make it difficult for the younger generation to think it through and to plan, because uncertainty breeds so much fear and confusion, and it feels very overwhelming, right? And that's kind of playing into the mental health piece. And then when we're going down a mental health path, there is just so many different things that then sort of make it hard to kind of move forward. And so what do you think? You have tips, thoughts about how to work through some of that?
Definitely challenging. I guess the only thing I'd say is certainly my faith is a big factor, but that's helpful, in terms of dealing with stressful stuff. But still, in terms of if you're working for employers, many of them aren't very nice. So that's definitely a reality. So I know brings to mind, actually pre-COVID, I was invited to speak at Princeton University here to one of their groups. And I was asked, hey, look, what do we look for, when we go out and getting employed? And I said, well, income's one thing, but the other thing that's very important, obviously, are benefits. And, today, healthcare, of course, is even a bigger issue than it was then. So, employer with, healthcare, and I said, they have some type of pension plan, great, but make sure they have a pretty generous 401k and whatever. And, and I said, in addition to that, you might, if you're able to talk with some other employees and see how they like where they work, what's their opinion and so forth.
Absolutely. I was actually doing a recording of a podcast yesterday, and we were talking a little bit about the process of even going and shadowing some people, like when you're considering different kinds of jobs, maybe even prior to college, right? Because a lot of times that's what I'm finding too, in my space particularly, and it is a very big hot button thing, and I talk a lot about it on the podcast, but it is student loans and student loan debt, because in my opinion, it is the albatross of our society. For a lot of reasons. One, societally, we have convinced entire generations of people that it's the only way to succeed. And first of all, that's garbage, right? It is not the only way to succeed. Is it maybe one of the more, guaranteed ways to succeed? I mean, maybe you can say that, but the truth is that I'm always going to say that if you bet in yourself, it's always a better bet, right, than anybody else or anybody else's opinion or whatnot. But it's created so much challenge because, people are getting where they've gotten these big, huge degrees. They've spent all this money, right? Even though they haven't felt that weight yet because it's not being paid right at that moment, right? When they're going through that whole process. And then now we're hitting the workforce and we don't even really know if we like the job that we got that big, heavy, expensive degree for, right? And so, I am a heavy proponent for people listening. If they're already way far down the path in their career, right, that they're making sure that it's aligned with their overall financial goals moving forward. But then also, if you have children, right, or that are getting to that juncture or getting close-ish, that you should be having very open, honest conversations with them about what it is they want to do, because the world looks very differently. I joke, but it's a true thing. I'll never forget when my girls were in high school and they were talking about how some people they knew were making actual real livings off YouTube, right? Which seems like a ridiculous concept if you're talking to somebody who was growing up, 60 years ago, like, wait, what? YouTube? Like, first of all, the internet didn't even exist, so that wouldn't have even been a possibility. But then the fact that you can make some substantial money, right, in this way, it is a very real thing. And so I think sometimes some of our very old school, not thought through, mindsets are hindering the younger generation and even ourselves from stepping out and saying, okay, I'm going to do something different, right? I feel led or called to kind of step into the fold in these kind of ways. I can say for me, I work a very traditional standard job in the mortgage industry, et cetera. Very typical, but when I got kind of called to start this podcast to do some courses and some programs to try to help people financially succeed, I was like, I don't know if I could be successful at this, but I got called to do it. So here we go.
Yeah, well, I have 9 grandchildren, and that what you just said relates very well. My oldest grandson and his wife are artists.
I love
professional.
That.
But they went to one of the, and that, you know, that, I mean, he's extremely talented. He went, you know, Rhode Island School of Design, you know, in the top art school probably in the country. And, you know, and he met his wife there, and they're doing very well. You know, that's what they wanted to do, but, you know, they paid the price, you know, what they had to do, knew what they had to do, and it's paying off well for them.
Well, he went in with an intention, right? Like, he didn't just go to art school because he wanted to go to art school and pay all this money for the art school, right? He went to that art school because he knew, like, this is where he wanted to be. And that intentionality is now paying off, in my opinion.
And they had the talent for it.
For sure. For sure.
Next brother has been, he's floundered around for a while. Yeah, he worked for a while. He was actually going to buy a business, and then, you know, and his dad got the financials and found out it wasn't what it was promoted to be. So he's now finishing, you know, a master's, did his underground, and now a master's in high level computer engineer, you know, nice. top level you could talk about. Okay. Let's see. Next oldest grandson is in the mortgage business.
Okay.
Doing, you know, getting mortgages for people who are buying very high level, you know, projects.
Okay.
Without college as the background, you know, he has the talent and the ability to do that. So his next brother is HVAC guy, HVAC, you know, college, you know, doing okay on his own. Then his next brother graduated with a double major in music, performing, and composing, classical, and is building his musical career using YouTube as part of the way to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then his younger brother is also an HVAC guy. And then my oldest granddaughter married a guy who has a beef farm and also works a cabot. You know, industrially, you know, making cheese. He does culmination of both of those. And then her sister's getting her RN now. She knew what she wanted to do, is also, you know, focused definitely at that. And as she's been doing it, you know, has worked and had experience, you know, to know that, you know, hey, you know, it ain't gonna freak me out. You know, I really want to do this. So that, you know, that's, those are examples fit in exactly what you're talking about. Just, you know, going off getting a gen ed or whatever, you know, with no idea what you want to do, yeah, it's highly questionable. And I've recommended to, you know, people, like, I've run into somebody, oh, I want to be an attorney, and, you know, and I have, you know, who knows what the heck you envision that might be like.
Stay tuned, we'll be back right after this message from our sponsors.
Welcome to Financial Mastery Simplified, your go-to podcast for making smart money decisions. We break down complex financial topics into easy-to-understand advice you can use every day. Our experts cover everything from budgeting and saving to investing and retirement planning. We give you the tools to take control of your money and build the future you want. With Financial Mastery Simplified, you'll feel informed and empowered to make the best choices for your financial health. Tune in to Financial Mastery Simplified on your favorite podcast platform. Start your journey to financial confidence today.
Visit us at fms.tips and fms.college for more information.
Welcome to House U, where we believe in the power of education. At House U, we're more than just a brand. We're your partner in home ownership, dedicated to educating, equipping, and empowering you every step of the way. Education is at the heart of everything we do. We offer comprehensive resources designed to make home ownership simple and accessible for all. From understanding mortgage options to mastering home maintenance, HouseU provides the knowledge you need to make informed decisions with confidence. We host workshops and seminars, bringing together experts and community members to share insights and build a stronger, more informed community. Because when you're educated, you're empowered. HouseU, home ownership made simple for all. Visit our website or contact us today to start your journey with HouseU. Empower yourself with knowledge and embrace the joy of home ownership.
Thanks for your patience. Now back to our conversation.
So go talk to some attorneys, you know, before you head down that track. Because I know all the commercials we watch are, you know what they are for attorneys, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, if you're getting...
there's so many different kinds of attorneys. Like, I don't think I had a concept of how many different kinds and versions and aspects of law until I went to law school. And I was like, holy cow, like so many different options. I mean, my professor who taught us legal writing, he actually was a law librarian. That was what his whole job was, for a giant law firm out of DC. And before he became a professor, that's what he did. He literally just was a law librarian for this law firm where he helped them figure out what cases they needed to bolster their case, right? Like all the case law, and helped them mind all the books and all that other stuff. And I was like, holy cow, like who would have thought, right? You could have a law degree and like that would be your career, I guess. And so I can't stress enough like how important it is when it comes to just money and financial mastery that we a lot of times are doing ourselves a disservice because we're falling into societal and cultural traps of, well, somebody said that this is what I should do, and so that's what I'm going to do, right? And I'm like, but why? Like, is that what you want? Because if it's what you want, it's like totally different, right? Like that you can live out whatever dream it is you'd like, but if you're just doing it because somebody told you that that's what you're supposed to do and you have no idea, especially if it's costing you a lot of money and you're going into a lot of debt because of it, I'm like, oof, that's not always the best choice.
Yeah. Hey, before we end, a couple of things I want to talk about to tie into what you do in home buying. 401k actually is a wonderful way for somebody to accumulate money to buy the first home. You know, first of all, it helps them save. You know, if they're getting help from their employer, that's certainly a big plus. But you can take up to $10,000 out of your 401k, you know, as a withdrawal for a home purchase, first home purchase, without having the penalty tax.
That's correct.
But
yeah,
also,
being the income tax.
Yeah, but also, if you even maybe you're going to be drawing some money out subject to the penalty tax, it's still worth doing, but you have to do it smartly. You'll understand this. You have to do it wisely. What I say is get an agreement if you can towards the end of the calendar year and close. If you could, close in January. And you take your withdrawal out the year you're completing the sale.
Right.
Because what will happen is now as a first-time homeowner, you'll get deductions that you didn't have before. You know, the mortgage interest deduction, tax deduction, so forth. There will be new deductions that will offset, you know, the tax, you know, penalties of, you know, taking the money out of the 401k plan.
For sure.
So that's, you know, one good way. And, you know, I've come up with a new plan that's, you know, it's called the Radish plan. It's actually employer funded. And what's happened is we've reached a point now, we've touched on around, talked around it here, where middle and low-income employees, large segment of them can't afford to have money taken out of their paycheck today, even if they have that opportunity. So we have a huge segment of the population that has nothing. You know, they have a negative asset value.
Correct. Like
minus 5, 10% or whatever. So this is a way for employers to help them build money into an account that they can access as they need it for emergency or other purposes. That's an issue. You know, lack of funds, has a negative impact upon performance. You know, if employees are worried about, hey, my car breaks down, you know, how in the world am I going to get to work? You know,
right? Yeah.
Money, exactly. So this is a way to build funds are available to do that, but it also, you know, could be used to, you know, towards home buying as well, you know, as other possibilities. You know, it's completely an employer funded. It's called the RADISH plan. It's actually an incentive plan. What happens is, you know, the employer decides which employees are going to cover out of that group, and then how, what they have to do, you know, what their performance has to be able to earn the incentives that are going to be made available to them. So unlike a 401k, your 401k employees get the match. They don't have to do anything other than just stay employed to get it. They don't have to meet any performance goals. Or this, you know, it's tied to whatever, where the company's saying, hey, you know, if you help us do well, here's how you're going to benefit from that. So it's pretty neat.
I love that. Well, and I love, like, it sort of a little bit reminds me of something that Geico, so that was actually my very first employer out of college, they did, where we had profit sharing, right? Mm-hmm. And so through profit sharing, one of the things that they encourage us to do is they had a website where we could go make suggestions for how to make the company better. So we could talk about, you know, different kinds of programs or things we could place, right? Ways that we could save money as a company, all these other things. And we all, of course, were incentivized to do that because the bigger profits we made, the more money we got through profit sharing. And so it was like a really great concept in my mind, because I think so oftentimes, in today's society, it almost feels like employer versus employee. Like it's kind of like a, you know, not always a positive. Right. Exactly. Not always a positive experience or thought process. And so I love some ideas that will bring back that sort of camaraderie, the sort of more togetherness, like we're all like a rising tide raises all ships kind of attitude, right? Towards employer employee kind of a mindset. And so I think that is awesome. And I love that you guys are creating that.
Yeah.
Well, and go ahead.
So the other thing we've done with it is we've actually gamified it. And what I mean by that is, it's engaging actively with the participant. So the employer can establish, okay, here's what you need to hit. And then the participant, the employee, can see the radishes building every week or month or whatever. And they can see, well, here's what I've received so far. And, oh, by the end of the year, here's how much I can get, you know, by the end of the year. And so we've introduced it to some major trucking companies, and they've gotten pretty excited about it because they have existing incentive plans and also some profit sharing arrangements like you're talking about, but it's not visible.
You right
know, at the end of the year, you know, the employees,
yeah, you're having to wait such a long time, so, like people, and we're in a very now society for sure.
Yeah, so this, it's, they actively engage with it, and it's you know, very engaging and visible. So
that is so cool. I love that. Well, and like I said, I'm all about, I've actually, eventually my ultimate goal is actually to start a nonprofit that goes in inner city schools specifically, teaches about money and finance and credit and basically aspects of things that maybe they don't, that group of people don't know as much about, but doing it through a gamified app where they actually would earn real money to be able to go towards educational systems, right? So college or trade school or something that would basically further their intention of, you know, being able to provide for themselves and things of that sort. Because it is gamification. There is a dopamine button in your brain where when you're seeing the positive results, right, it just lights up that brain and helps us so much. And I think that is one of the biggest struggles. And I think the negative things that came out of COVID is like a lot of fear, a lot of confusion, a lot of frustration, and not a lot of positive mindset aspects that are pushing some of these things forward, because there are still amazing people in the world, people looking to help and you know, and give a leg up and things like that. And I feel like the doom and gloom is sort of overcome society, I suppose, at the moment. And to me, that's really sad, because I definitely know that that aspect exists in the world, right? I mean, we can't, you can't literally pull open your phone or turn on a TV or any of that stuff without getting that aspect of the world. But there is so much positive that is happening. And I think that that plan is an amazing thing. And so tell us where they can kind of find you and it. Because it's been an amazing conversation. I want to definitely make sure that they can find you.
Well, if they just Google my name, they'll find me.
Okay, that's good.
That's that. But the plan is, the website is www.radishplan.com. And we picked that name because radishes grow fast. They have long roots. They're easy to harvest. They're colorful. You know, and it's easy to brand also. So
there you go. Name. Yeah, it's definitely something that, like, I was like, radish. And I wondered if we were talking about the food, but I was like, well, maybe. But then when you spelled it and explained it, so that's really cool. I love that. Well, thank you so much for taking your time and being our guest today. Your wisdom and your insight is so amazing. And I'm so appreciative that you took that time. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Financial Mastery Simplified, guys. Hopefully this episode was helpful. See you again next week.